Hello and welcome to our third episode of Overtime Podcast. I'm your main host, Mark, as always. And as always, as well, my co-host, Michael.
What's going on?
Nothing much. We got a lot in store for you today. As always, we have our special guest of the week, which I will introduce him in a couple of seconds. But first, for first-time listeners, which I know we always have, for our first-time listeners, please visit our website at overtimepodcast.com. If you have a Twitter, just follow us on the same thing, Overtime Podcast. And if you want to follow us also on Facebook and have the triple package, just click like on the bottom right corner of our website and you'll be able to get all the latest updates that we say. But now to introduce our special guest of the week is our friend Javier Vasquez. What's up, Javi?
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hey, man. Thanks for coming on the show, by the way.
No problem. It's good to be here.
So how you been lately, man?
I've been good. Working.
And isn't that what everybody does? Work. But thank God we have enough time to get out of work and do this show for all you listeners who want to keep up in the latest sports news. Thanks again for coming, by the way, Javi. Moving on to the NFL Combine, which is the latest stories that I want to first talk about. We'll talk about the top performers, and to me, let's talk about the top performer from the NFL Combine. In my opinion, the top performer so far would have to be Julio Jones. Julio Jones is the wide receiver out of Bama. He is stated to be the number two receiver out of the draft. Could possibly be number one with the performance he had. Just to give a quick NFL Combine report, he ran the 40 time in 4.39 seconds. And the board jump at 11 foot 3 inches. That's just 2 inches away from the record, which is an incredible stat. And on top of what's even more credible besides his statistics, he did this all under a fractured foot. What do you have to say about this, Mike?
It's amazing how this guy ran a 40 in 4.39 with a broken foot. That just amazes me. And it scares me what his 40 time will be with a healed foot.
Yeah, it could be very scary. Javi, what do you think about his performance?
With his performance on the combine, it doesn't surprise me. He's had a couple of great seasons at Alabama. He's definitely one of the best receivers coming out of the draft. I can't help but be impressed by this guy. Any team that drafts him is going to have an awesome receiver for years to come.
That is true. You could be looking at a good number one receiver in many teams. Just to give quick statistics of his 2010 season, he caught 1,133 yards and 7 touchdowns. Very great statistics, and he doubled the number two receiver in a long shot. This kid's got great talent. It's true what Michael says. This kid with a nice operated foot, which will take 8 weeks to recover, and some inserting them pins and everything, once he has all that done, he should be very dangerous. Whatever team decides to grab him, I'm sure they're going to have an amazing number one receiver for many years to come, like Javier said. Moving on, though, to our second top performer in my list, I would have to say it would be Patrick Peterson, the defensive back from LSU. This guy had an amazing combine, ran the 40 in 4.34. The kid has won the Defensive Player of the Year award, and not to mention the Defensive Back award by a long shot. He now officially went number one in Mel Kiper's top board, which has a lot to say. This kid did very good in the combine, and I think he solidified himself for sure as a top five pick. And it's going to be hard to see Denver pass on him, even with now Daquan Bowers being injured. Michael, what do you think?
Like I said, this guy before, he's an amazing cornerback. This guy's one of an athlete of once in a lifetime, and he just proved in the NFL combine his true skill.
Most definitely.
Corners like him are really hard to find. I mean, it's really hard to find a corner with a complete skill set. This guy can return the ball, he can cover the pass, and he's a willing tackler. If you have a chance to get a corner out of that, you shouldn't hesitate. You should take him.
Reminds me a lot about Eric Berry, and look how well Eric Berry played for Kansas City. Made a big step to their defense and helped their defensive back. I'm pretty sure Patrick Peterson will do the same in whatever team he
goes to. Definitely.
Moving on to the surprise performer now. most of the people here are going Cam Newton mania. Cam Newton didn't have that great of a performance, though one quarterback did. Jake Locker is that quarterback from Washington. He actually tied Cam Newton's 40 record with a 4.59. And I honestly thought Cam Newton was a lot faster than Jake Locker, which right there showed Jake Locker that he took a big step and wanting to be for sure a first-round pick. A thing we didn't see on Cam Newton didn't look flexible. He didn't make consistent throws. He sometimes overthrew, underthrew. Must be very nervous when it's all there. What do you think, Mike?
It's very nervous, especially for a guy like him who's trying to prove to the experts that he can be the number one cornerback off the list. But going back to Jay Locker, this guy went from being last draft, he couldn't have been possibly number one pick off the board, but instead he stayed in Washington one more year, and now he showed the experts that he's still the same quarterback and he still has the same skills from a year ago.
The thing with Cam Newton, obviously he didn't perform as well as the other quarterbacks at the combine. I don't think he's not a complete quarterback right now. He's going to be a work in progress. As for Jake Locker, some people don't know. Jake Locker was drafted in the MLB. He decided to go back to school and continue to play football. So he has all the tools of a great quarterback. He has a big arm. He has the size. He's mobile in the pocket. Has great decision making. He's a great quarterback. Hopefully my Redskins take him at 10, but I'll be happy with even Blaine Gabbert as well.
That's if Blaine Gabbert is there. And going back to what you said, Cam Newton is a project, in my opinion. Could probably sit a year and gain some experience, and maybe Jake Locker as well. I think the quarterback that you can NFL start ready right now, we all know, is Blaine Gabbert, who did a very good job in the combine. But what surprised Jake Locker the most, to many reports that I was seeing, is how consistent he was able to do the deep passes. He was able to do the deep outs perfectly. He was able to do the fade routes perfectly. And, of course, the toughest in any college, because it's not run that much, the post-corner routes. And for Jake Locker to accomplish that makes him a step closer into being a top 25 pick for sure. As for Cam Newton, he has to make it up in his pro day, and we'll see what he does from there. But we'll see. Both quarterbacks are very good, especially Blaine Gabbert, so we could say all three. It's just going to be a tough pro day for all three of them to finally commit themselves as the first three quarterbacks in the first round probably taken. Moving on, though, to our next player that performed very well is the guy from Texas A&M, Von Miller, outside linebacker. The guy ran an incredible 4.46 for an outside linebacker and did the board jump 10 foot 6 inches. Now, in most cases now, he is the perfect fit for a 3-4 outside linebacker. We're talking a guy that people are comparing to Brian Arakpo from the Washington Redskins. The kid works hard, has an aggressive motor, and does whatever it takes to get on the field. And once he falls down, he gets back up fast.
Von Miller last year had an early injury, and he still led the nation in sacks. Terrific athlete, you're right. Does remind you a lot about Brian Arakpo. Just look at what he did for the Redskins in his rookie year, and now recently, last year, made the Pro Bowl both years. Incredible athlete. Can't say enough about him.
He is, though, most definitely a very athletic athlete. We'll have to see what team takes him. He did move up now with this great combine to the top 5 boards in the Mel Kiper board. So we'll have to see what team will take the chance and draft Von Miller. Moving on, though, to the defensive tackle side. The two most known defensive tackles, of course, the first one is Nick Farley, and second, right behind him, Marcell Dareus from Alabama. Nick Farley played amazing in the championship game, Auburn versus Oregon, pretty much carried the load since Cam Newton's underachieving performance in there, and Nick Farley carried the team on his shoulders. Now, his 40 time, which is freaking incredible because it's even faster than me, is 4.82, while Marcell Dareus came in second place at 4.92. Now, both of them here are fighting each other to see who's the best defensive tackle spot. And right now, you know, my opinion, probably Nick Farley, but Marcel Darius is more mature, and I think we'll be able to adapt to a team faster than Nick Farley. We all see that in the NBA, how DeMarcus Cousins took him a while to adapt to becoming a very good player just because his personality. A personality does not change switching to a team. He's still going to be the same age, and I think that's something that teams got to be scared of, Nick Farley, and might scare Carolina away from the first pick.
Agree. Character is everything. I believe Darius is going to come out perfectly good in the NFL because of his character. Farley is a beast, though, but due to his character, he's going to progress slower than Darius would in the end.
In my opinion, Darius, right now, I have him ahead of Farley. It's true, the whole thing about his personality, he could be a bit immature and stuff, but it's not only that. Marcel Darius could play either 3-4 or 4-3. Remember, he's coached by Nick Saban. Any Nick Saban coach player, you know you're getting a great player in return. This guy never takes a playoff. He had 4.5 sacks in 2010. So he, right now, is ahead of Nick Farley. But Nick Farley is no pushover either. He did help Auburn win that championship because Cam Newton did not play up to par.
Most definitely. We'll have to see there. Other defensive linemen who turned an impressive time. Allen Bailey from the University of Miami ran a 4.76. Christian Ballard from Iowa ran a 4.7. Adrian Claiborne, who could be a first-round pick, also has maturity problems, but he ran a 4.81. Cam Jordan from California ran a 4.71. Ryan Kerrigan, who I think will be a top 15 pick, ran a 4.67. And Corey Luganet from Illinois ran a 4.95, a defensive tackle, running a 4.95. Jesus, that's even faster than me. So, we'll have to see a lot of good defensive side of the ball here in this draft. Some of them might fall, some of them might slip. It all depends on their character, the way they perform, their hard work, you know, and the way, you know, they just are overall, because that's what you need in a player. You need it overall. You may have athletic ability, but you have some character issues. You might want to stay away with that. We saw that with Des Bryant, and he fell all the way to the 24th pick. You see that happen to many basketball players, many MLB players. It happens everywhere. Character is a big thing, and it impresses coaches if you're a hard worker. That's why Tim Tebow raised his stock and became a first-round pick. So I won't be surprised if Marcel Darius actually will now shift as the number one defensive tackle, even running a slower 40 time. Now, other surprise person that I have to mention because of the amazing 40 time that he ran and just the underachieving he did in college, but what he's done so far in his combine, and that player is DeMarcus Van Dyke, cornerback from the University of Miami. He was 0.03 away from breaking the all-time 40-dash record at 4.28. And the funny thing about this, which I know, Javi, you're a big-time Hurricane fan, is DeMarcus Van Dyke only started three times in 2010 for the University of Miami.
Very true, very true. Especially after coming out of a good program as Pace. He only started three games for the Hurricanes, but it goes to show you that sometimes you don't have to start to be a star.
It most definitely does. It also shows, maybe with the whole Randy Shannon era, maybe there is a lot of talent there in the University of Miami. Just maybe it wasn't, used properly. We saw Sam Shields performed excellently for the Green Bay Packers and all the trouble that he went through. Jimmy Graham, a complete stud at tight end for the New Orleans Saints this year, even releasing Jeremy Shockey of how confident they are. And, now this kind of puts behind back of GM's head all the players that even though they didn't play that much in college, you could still end up getting somebody very solid in the draft. It may not be a first, second round pick, but, you know, maybe in the later rounds, if you want to get some depth in your corner position, DeMarcus Van Dyke might possibly be a perfect fit for a third string cornerback right there, even a nickel corner, which he played in University of Miami.
Well, perfect example of players that didn't play as much and ended up in the NFL. Look at the world champ Green Bay Packers with Sam Shields. Played receiver in college, converted into a cornerback, and did an outstanding job this year for the Packers.
Most definitely. I mean, it's ridiculous to see this, you know, what second chances players can give to you. Sometimes they're even better than first string, you know, first round picks in the draft. It all just depends on the kid's motivation to work and become better and being able to adapt to the NFL at a fast-paced time. Getting away from the combine, let's get into the real NFL news and stuff around rumors and the latest news. Let's start off with Carson Palmer from the Cincinnati Bengals. Made some very funny statements. I believe Michael can refer to what he was saying.
I'm going to take on quote-unquote for this. He said that he has no desire to play for the Bengals, saying that he has $80 million in the bank and he will not set one foot on Paul Brown Stadium. He does not have to play for the Bengals. He'll only play the game out of love.
Very harsh words coming out of Carson Palmer. Carson Palmer is their former first-round pick from many seasons ago. People from Cincinnati have been ups and downs with Carson Palmer. One year, they say he's Pro Bowl material. The next year, they're killing the guy. Maybe he's had enough of it. Javi, what do you think are potential places where Carson Palmer could maybe draft if they do decide to let him go?
Well, right off the bat, I could see him in the NFC West. Almost every team other than the Rams need a quarterback. Look at San Francisco, Cardinals, even the Seahawks with the Matt Hasselbeck situation not settled yet. How much longer you think he's going to last there?
Most definitely. Well, continue what you were saying.
Other places I could see him going, Dolphins definitely need some competition at quarterback. If the Dolphins would be able to pick him up, that would be awesome. You can see him going to
other teams that you could possibly see him going to is also Minnesota. Minnesota is also looking for quarterbacks. There's a lot of teams that are looking for quarterbacks with this whole CBA issue. God knows where you're going to get a quarterback, but if he does get released, I know a lot of teams are looking for an experienced quarterback, like most of the teams that you said. And, you know, Carson Palmer has been in the playoffs, which is what a lot of teams are looking already. Playoff experience also helps you when your team actually finally gets in the playoffs. You have somebody that's going to be already there and ready to make the big steps in the playoffs. Moving on to our next story, though. Clinton Portis today was released by the Washington Redskins. No big surprise here. Injury prone in Washington. Hasn't had the seasons that he had when he was in Denver. But there is rumors to be that Denver could be a possible fit back for the backup for Knowshon Moreno once again going to Denver. Mike, what do you think about that?
It's pretty good for Clinton Portis. I think at this point in his career, he's not a feature back. He'll be better off being a backup running back for any team that needs a solid number two running back at this point.
He is a very solid, possibly number two running back, especially now he's over his 30s, and usually 30-year-old running backs become their second string running backs in most league. And I believe Denver needs help on the offensive side. They just can't find that number two. Karell Buckhalter, he's getting old, and he's never been that great number two running back. They could also get rid of also Lindell White, a complete bust in the NFL. I think it'll be a perfect fit for Clinton Portis to go to back to where he started from, Denver. Javi, what do you think?
Well, you're right. He's going to be a number two. A lot of his good years were wasted in Washington behind a very depleted offensive line. The Redskins had one of the worst offensive lines for like the past 3 years, and in those 3 years, I think Clinton Portis led the NFL. If I'm correct, I think those 3 years, led the NFL in most carries with about 300 plus carries. Right now, I'm gonna say he is a solid number two, but you never know. I mean, just look at LT with a change of scenery, could do good. Never know, he might become the future back in Denver.
Possibly so. I mean, Knowshon Moreno is their young, talented running back. Maybe another team could take him in as their number one running back. Possibly the Bills. CJ Spiller didn't work out so well. Maybe Clinton Portis will maybe head to Buffalo. A lot of teams here are looking for running backs this season. Running back is a position, obviously, that you would most likely want to take a veteran as your number two running back. And Clinton Portis, to me, fits that number two running back this late in the game. His good seasons, like both of you have said, have passed him already. He's not the same, but maybe a change of scenery, like Javi said, like what happened to LaDainian Tomlinson, he could possibly be a number one somewhere else. And moving on to our last story for football before we go on a break would be all the people that the Jets release this coming week. Starting off from the biggest surprise here, obviously Damian Woody. Damian Woody was their starting right tackle, not to mention a Pro Bowler for many years. How do you think, guys, is this going to affect the Jets' offensive linemen?
Well, at least a hole on the right side. They're going to have to go looking for a free agency or even the draft to replace the tackle position. Damian Woody was a solid tackle, and he'll find another team right away.
Most definitely, he'll find another team.
Yeah, it's a big loss for the Jets. But if anything, the Jets have shown that they could reload quickly. So I don't see them having any trouble replacing that right tackle spot.
Most definitely. We'll see what they do here. They could possibly go in the draft or via free agency. Or maybe they have somebody already that's in their team and that's ready to take that next step in becoming a starting role. We'll see what Rex Ryan has planned for there. The second biggest blow. Now, it's a blow because of how good the player is when he's healthy. When he's not healthy, well, you know, that's as good as nothing for anybody. Would be the defensive tackle for the New York Jets, Chris Jenkins. Now, this is a major blow to me because this guy is a Pro Bowler everywhere. Once he's there, you could tell that the hole is clogged. Now, I understand they want to let go of him. It's two seasons already full that he's missed, and I believe they want to move on from that, not to mention his age is coming up already over the 30s, even though defensive tackles usually stay for longer because it's a position that is the oldest in the NFL that you could have players even from 35, 36-year-olds play great even old. And I believe the Jets are moving away from this, not only to clear cap and everything, but I think Poah, their defensive second string defensive tackle, showed a lot the last two seasons starting for them in place of Chris Jenkins.
I think Chris Jenkins was a bit of a head scratcher for me, because even though, yes, with injuries, but when this guy's on the field, this guy is a Pro Bowler, like you said. He plays 100% every time he plays, and only injuries has shortened this guy's career.
I wouldn't be surprised if he's back with the Jets. He is an extraordinary tight end. I'll give him that. But in the past two seasons, both seasons tearing his ACL, probably has a high price contract. Jets probably wanted to clear up some cap, and will probably bring him back in the coming days.
Hopefully, if he takes a cheaper salary to stay for New York, he possibly could come back. Another person that said that we'll take cheaper salary will be our third player on the board, Jason Taylor, former Miami Dolphin for many seasons, possible Hall of Fame automatically, said when he was released, he left with open doors. Once open doors, never closes with Rex Ryan. He loves players that want to come back and want to come back because they want to play for the New York Jets. That shows a lot from Jason Taylor. Other noticeable things about Jason Taylor, 36 years old, but still can play. Is he the same Jason Taylor as before? Most definitely not, but he still could provide that third down pass rush that will help the Jets not lose that pass rush that is so magnificent about the Jets' defense.
A lot of teams have shown interest in Jason Taylor, but Jason Taylor has come out and said he will only play for New York and only the New York Jets.
Most definitely.
I'll give it to him. I mean, we all love Jason Taylor. Whether he plays for the Jets or not, he played with the Dolphins for so long. But you know what? If he goes back to the Jets, you know, at least he found a home there. You know, like they say, it's nice to feel wanted. And if the Jets want him back, then you know what? Go ahead.
They probably take him in a heartbeat. Just that heart and determination that Jason Taylor has always had in whatever team he's in. That helps the defense not only playing, but helps the players keep motivated. And Jason Taylor has always been a big motivator in whatever team he has been. And moving on to the not-so-surprise, but you can say Jamarcus Russell bust. And especially for me, especially how much I defended this kid and how good he was going to be, he ended up being a complete bust. And that person is Vernon Golston from the New York Jets. The fifth pick about three drafts ago, right behind Jake Long, which Jake Long's only sack in college came from Vernon Golston. We all thought Vernon Golston would be an excellent pass rusher for them. Tried to keep him at outside linebacker for two seasons, and for his final season, which was this last season, they moved him to defensive end, where they tried to see if he could actually make his first career sack, which is kind of ridiculous because anybody usually gets a sack, in my opinion. I mean, you know, the offensive lineman falls down, something happens, and you're able to collect at least one sack. But Vernon Golston was not able to do that. Do you think a change of scenery is what he needs, Michael?
Yes and no, but like you said, I defended this kid along with you when he came out. I was like with everyone else. When I saw that he was the only guy to get a sack through Jake Long, I was like, whoa, now that he's in the Jets and Jake Long is in the Dolphins, they're going to go at it. I was wrong. And it's just sad to see 3 years without a sack. It just, I don't know, even with a change of scenery will, you know, jumpstart his career. I don't know.
I mean, maybe a new defense or something could jumpstart his career. I mean, it's, like you guys say, it is pretty sad. In the 3 years that he played for the Jets, he recorded a total of 42 tackles. That's pretty sad. But who knows? I mean, people wanted Jamarcus Russell, and he's the biggest bust in the NFL. So, obviously, some team is going to take a chance on this guy. Maybe he'll make an impact. Maybe he won't.
We'll just have to wait and see what team he does. Maybe he needs to change instead of a 3-4 to a 4-3. We'll see what teams do. Usually your first team and your bus, it takes a second team sometimes to declare finally if you're a bus. Well, that about wraps it up for the first part of the show. We talked a lot about the combine, talked a lot about all the players, perfect fits where they can go, players for second chances. Very good first part, but please stay tuned. We'll have our second part coming up in very short. Hello and welcome back to Overtime Podcast. Boy, do we have a second half for you. Right now, we're going to talk a little bit about baseball. But for that, I'm going to pass you to our co-host, Michael Dagger, our baseball insider.
Thanks a lot for the opportunity, Mark. In this segment, we're going to talk about a couple of headlines as well as a couple of sleeper players and teams, and we're going to finish it off with a World Series prediction. We're going to start off talking about Justin Morneau. Justin Morneau had a concussion dating back to around July 7th. Until this day, he still has concussion symptoms. The doctors have not cleared him to play on spring training, and he has yet to take a couple BPs. What do you guys take on Justin Morneau and his injury?
Well, Justin Morneau, to me, is a very valuable player for the Minnesota Twins. Not to mention that he bats right behind the incredible Joe Mauer. It's a big hit, and I could relate something to the concussion symptoms. I've had a concussion before, not from baseball, but from football. And I know concussion is something that, you know, a lot of players do not bounce back from. It all depends on their migraines. You know, it's a very risky thing that, you know, a lot of players do not, you know, want to take for granted.
Justin Morneau, from what I've heard, last year when he was in the lineup, the Twins were like an unbeatable team, even without Joe Nathan. So as soon as the Twins get him back, they're going to go from being a great team to an unbelievably great team.
Most definitely. This kid a couple years back was an MVP when Joe Mauer went down with an injury. So we all know how valuable he is to the Minnesota Twins. All we can do right now is wish him for a speedy recovery and return back to the lineup. Our second news is probably the biggest news in the baseball world, and it's about Adam Wainwright going down with a ligament injury. And it's not no ordinary injury. He's going to have Tommy John surgery, and he's going to be locked down for the whole year, possibly until the 2012 season. Adam, as last year, was probably one of the top pitchers in the Major League Baseball, winning over 20 games and came in second for the National League Cy Young Award. We all know how valuable he is. Mark, what's your take on this?
This is a big blow, of course, to the St. Louis Cardinals. Now this is going to make Chris Carpenter, their number two pitcher, be their ace pitcher at such a very old age. Like you said, Adam Wainwright is a fantasy monster, is a Cardinal monster. He's their main ace, wins 20 games for you. If he doesn't win the 20, he wins a lot for you season in and season out. It's a big blow to them. Hope for a speed recovery for him so he can return for the St. Louis Cardinals, especially now with Albert Pujols in a contract season. It's going to make a big decision on Albert's half how good the Cardinals do this season.
Yeah, I agree there. The Wainwright injury, it makes it that much tougher on the Cardinals to try to sign Albert Pujols. They're just not the same team without him. He really did carry the load last year for the Cardinals, and they're really going to miss him this year.
Very true, very true. Adam is very valuable to his team, so we'll see how they're going to move on with this injury. There has been reports that Chris Carpenter is open for a trade, though I find it highly unlikely that the Cardinals will trade away their ace pitcher with Adam down.
At this point and late in the game now with Chris, Adam Wainwright down, it's going to be very hard to get rid of somebody with such a great whip rating and Chris Carpenter. I've had him in my fantasy team. He's been a very good player. Even being old, he still has to take over. And I don't think he will be traded at this point unless they get equal or fair value back for Chris Carpenter.
And right now, the Cardinals will probably overvalue him at this point. Moving on to our third headline, is going to be talk about Josh Beckett. And it's not injury, it's not a stats thing. It happened during practice. Josh Beckett was probably around left field, probably talking to the coaches, during middle of batting practice. An undisclosed hitter hit the ball and struck Josh Beckett on the side of his head. He was taken to the hospital with concussion symptoms, and he's going to miss a couple starts during spring training. My take on this, I hope it's not a Justin Bourneau situation, that he's going to last over a year, possibly with concussion symptoms. I believe Josh Beckett battling through injuries before with his blisters and every other injury he's had, he's going to probably bounce back. What's your take on this, guys?
Let me start off with saying Josh Beckett is a major key thing for the Boston Red Sox. I mean, everybody here is talking about the Phillies' four aces. I already see the Boston Red Sox having their four aces of their own. They've been there for a while, though, and they might not be as good as the Redskins, but I'm sorry, the Phillies. But it's a big loss to Josh Beckett. Hopefully he could get back. I know he hasn't been the same player. He had a good season with Boston his first year with Boston. But ever since, he's not had a great season like he's had with the Marlins before he left. It's a major loss for them. We all know John Lester there is their main pitcher, and Josh Beckett is their second guy. He needs to get back. He needs to get ready. And it's going to be a miss if he does miss out for the rest of the year.
I think Josh Beckett will be back by the opening day. He'll be there opening day. I don't think in any way that this is like the Justin Morneau situation. If anything, I think he's more long than Justin Morneau. But the Red Sox do really need him in the lineup. They're clearly not the same team without him.
Most definitely. Josh Beckett at this point is their second ace behind Clay Buchholzer and John Lackey. And going without Josh Beckett beginning the season is going to put major pressure on John Lester and also their future ace in Clay Buchholzer. Moving on to what I call our fun segment of this. I'm going to have each one of us pick one specific player out of any single Major League Baseball team. And it's going to be your sleeper pick for the 2011 Major League Baseball season. I'm going to start off picking Mike Stanton from the Florida Marlins. This kid came in half a season, called from the minors, hit around between 20 and 25 home runs in half a season. And I believe this kid is the real deal. I've had this kid projected to hit over possibly 40 home runs with the Marlins, which is going to be a first thing in a while for the young Florida Marlins team. And this guy is going to be what Miguel Cabrera was for them a couple years back when they won the World Series.
Very good pick with Mike Stanton. Hopefully he stays healthy. I know he's right now going through a quadricep injury right now. Should be back in 2 weeks. He is a promising player for the Marlins. But I'm going to have to go with the first baseman from the New York Mets and Ike Davis. He's one of the most promising young sluggers that they have. And we all know to hit in Citi Field, that's quite difficult, especially in your first year. We're talking about a kid his first year batted 264, drove in 73 runs, hit 19 home runs, 71 RBIs, and he stole like three bases, which is not really his game, but he still ends up doing it if he has the opportunity. Kid has to play big for them. I believe the Mets are going to be able to turn around with Ike Davis. He's very promising, and we all know, like I repeated over and over again, Citi Field is one of the hardest places to be hitting home runs in, and this kid accomplished it. Like most people say on his first years, imagine what he can do following seasons. If he doesn't have a sophomore slump, hopefully he could be a very good sleeper.
I'll give that to you, but my well, I'm going to pick a sophomore as well. I'm going to go with Buster Posey of the San Francisco Giants. He had an amazing second half of the season last year, and he played at a really high level in the playoffs. So I just, you know, this kid is just amazing. I don't see him going anywhere but up at this point. It's going to be really interesting to see what the San Francisco Giants do this year with him.
Amazing picks by all of us. I noticed we all have rookies, and we're all praying for them not to have sophomore slumps. Moving on, we're going to pick our sleeper team for the year. Same with the players, just a different team. I'm going to go with the Florida Marlins. This team has a young core of young players. You go from Michael Stein, you go to Hanley Ramirez, you go to Gabby Sanchez, and the list goes on and on. The pitching staff, even with Josh Johnson as the anchor, followed by Javier Vasquez, and an up-and-coming great pitcher, Anibal Sanchez. I believe this team has what it takes to be the surprise team in the National League, to take the wild card and make some noise into the playoffs. I don't have them going deep into the playoffs, possibly first round and out. Hopefully there's more, but I don't expect much more from this young team.
Very good pick. Very young. Could possibly make it to the playoffs. I know Hanley has stated that he's going to push his team the hardest he can because he's sick and tired of watching it on the playoffs on TV during the when his season is over. But I'm actually going to pick a team that I think now with the acquisition of Zach Greinke is going to make it, I think, over the hump, and that's the Milwaukee Brewers. I think they have a very good, young, promising team, all-around game. Now with Yovani Galarado, another year under his belt, especially now being the number two, hopefully with Zach Greinke being that lead ace there. Hopefully Ryan Braun and Prince Fielder can all bat at the same pace. I know they have some trouble batting at the same time. Prince Fielder had an off year last year. If he could go back to being that elite first baseman power slugger player and that Ryan Braun being that all-around person, I think Milwaukee's going to be very good this year. Not to mention with Casey McGee and Ricky Weeks as well on their team, I think Milwaukee's a team to watch out and a very dangerous team down the line.
My team is going to be the Atlanta Braves. They're coming off, you know, their final year with Bobby Cox. Now they got Freddie Gonzalez. They did pick up Dan Uggla from the Marlins. You know, they had, you know, Jason Hayward that played really good last year, had that injury but still played phenomenal as a rookie. You know, and they do have a former Marlin in Alex Gonzalez playing shortstop, you know. I see the Braves going far. I just don't think they're going to make the World Series, but, you know, you never know in baseball. Anything could happen.
Not to mention with the acquisition of Dan Uggla, another former Marlin there, another slugger that they have there, they also are going to be able to move Martin Prado to play other positions out there, third base, second base, shortstop, outfield. So they do have a very good, promising team, not to mention in their pitching staff. So very good choice in picking the Atlanta Braves.
With Dan Uggla, I believe they made this move because they see that Chipper Jones has passed his prime and is only degrading as years go by, so they're trying to move on, and they believe Dan Uggla could be their main guy to build around the team. Also, with Martin Prado, they'll probably push him to third base to take over Chipper Jones. But fine picks by all of us, which leads us to our last segment, which will be our World Series prediction. I have the amazing Phillies and their four-headed pitching rotation monster head going against the Red Sox and their amazing team. Each team has an amazing pitching rotation with an amazing closer. They have up and down 1-9 great batters. This is going to go for sure 7 games, and I have in the end the Red Sox winning. What are you guys' predictions?
Well, to start off, very good picks. We all know the elite teams, obviously, are both of them, the Phillies, Red Sox. They have what it takes. You need to get pitching in there, and you need to also have your batting, and both teams do a very fine job. I'm going to stick with the Boston Red Sox on that side. I do believe they got to watch out for the Yankees. Now, I know they're kind of weak at the pitching staff, but the Yankees are still the Yankees, especially if Derek Jeter comes back, Robinson Cano finishes with a good year, A-Rod, they still have that batting power that scares away sometimes the pitchers. Last year, we saw that the pitchers were very good and on their game last year with all the complete games that everybody was doing. Though, I believe on the national side, I'm going to have to go with the Colorado Rockies. Overall, good team. They have the pitching. They have the players. Ubaldo Jimenez, I think, is a very good pitcher. A lot of people don't believe so. I think he's a very good, solid pitcher that they have. They have, of course, Troy Tulowitzki there. That is an amazing number two overall shortstop. And at the same time, they have Cargo, who was number one fantasy Raider player last year. They got a very good team everywhere. Dexter Fowler. They have what it takes, in my opinion. They have a very good infield, outfield. I just think they're going to make it over. I think the Phillies right now with their four-headed monster aces, they're very good, but I think they lack the fact of driving in runs. But we'll see what they do.
You're right about that, about the Phillies driving in runs. My pick is going to be the Phillies. You just can't get past the four-headed monster. The one thing that I do have with the Phillies, and hopefully they're able to overcome it as the season progresses, is how is it that they replaced Jason Worth? He was very productive and played amazing in the outfield. Hopefully they find his replacement, but I don't see no reason as to why the Phillies don't go to the World Series this year.
Very true, very true. They do have to replace big balance Jason Worth, but I believe they have a rising star in the minor leagues coming up. We'll see what happens from there on. And this concludes our segment of baseball. Our third and final segment, which will include NBA. For that, I'm going to kick it back to your main host, Mark.
Well, going back now to the NBA, biggest news that we have seen so far, obviously, that just happened were the trade deadlines. And we're going to start off with that. Obviously, Melo finally got his wish, went to the Knicks, brought along Chauncey Billups and a bunch of other good role model players. I want to know your personal take on where the Knicks stand right now. We've seen a couple games already, Melo, Amari, and Billups play. They look like they've played well, but I want to know how serious you think this team is. Is this team going to win now? Is this team going to win in the future? Do you think they're ready in the playoffs? Are they missing some pieces? What do you think, Javi?
The philosophy of the team has to change. I have seen a couple other games so far. I have been impressed with them because they're not playing. It's not all about the offense now. It's about the defense. And, you know, it started with Chauncey Billups. Chauncey Billups now is that anchor on that defense. But, of course, it needs to change because Mike D'Antoni is known for a fast-paced, high-octane offense, and they need some defense in New York. I don't think they'll win this year, but this move clearly put them as a top four, top five team in the East. If they're able to make it past the first round, they're going to have a tough time in the second round, whether they play the Heat or whether they play the Celtics. But they're not there with the Celtics, the Heat, or the Bulls. But you know what? Next year, they have to get better, and they have to address the defense.
I completely agree with the whole move that New York pulled the trigger for Carmelo Anthony, bringing in with Chauncey Billups. Now, what I see is they gave up a big major piece, big piece of the puzzle that they had built in New York, with Gallinari, Raymond Felton, you name it, the list goes on. They gave up about four of their top players that scored over 10 points a game just for Carmelo Anthony and Chauncey Billups.
Not right to now, mention two first-rounders.
As well, two first-rounders. Along also the draft pick they got from the Golden State Warriors. But this team, this year, they're not going to win. Will they make it to the first round? For sure. Will they make it out of it? I don't know. If they do, they won't survive in the second round if they have to put up with Chicago, Boston, or Miami. Even though they came back and beat Miami in a shocker a couple games ago, but in a seven-game series, they will not take on Miami. This team will win in the future. They need to, in the offseason, sit down, build pieces around Chauncey Billups, Carmelo Anthony, Amari Stoudemire. The rumors have said that Chris Paul has said that he will go to New York. Yeah, Chauncey Billups is there, but I don't know about you guys. I prefer Chris Paul over Chauncey Billups. Chauncey Billups, yes, he is that defensive guy. He makes the big shots when it's counted. He's a great point guard, but Chris Paul is all that and more. I believe Chris Paul is an amazing point guard, probably the number one point guard of all the point guards in the league. And if he goes to New York, their big three will, I'm sad to say this, they will beat the Miami big three, and they will scare even Boston out and probably go to the NBA Finals next year or a couple years down the road.
We'll see what they do. I like the acquisition. I agree. If they add Chris Paul there, they'll be an even scarier team. Right now, they could win. They beat the Heat, like you said, in a one game where probably the Heat, you know, came overconfident, how they've already beat the Knicks over and over again this season. They probably didn't play to their A game as they expected. But good acquisition. Gave Melo his wish. He's happy in New York. We'll see what they do with that. Moving on to actually the shocker, in my opinion. I know Javi told me about this, but I really didn't think this was going to happen. And that's Deron Williams going to the Nets. Now, my personal take on this, I really understand it, but I don't understand the trade, if you know what I'm saying. Now, he left Utah, and there were some good pieces in Utah. I mean, they were building around for Deron Williams in the first place. They got rid of the coach. They added some pieces, Rajah Bell, Gordon Hayward in the draft, Al Jefferson, got rid of Carlos Boozer, but still got Paul Millsap there. I thought they had a very good team there. And, you know, this trade surprised me completely on the fact where he went to the Nets, where, you know, they're just a team, just to me, almost like the Utah Jazz. Was it a change of scenery, Michael, do you think?
Maybe. We don't know. I'm also scratching my head on the move. I'm trying to see where's the upgrade. You know, Devin Harris is like nowhere in value near Deron Williams. Maybe New Jersey needed that big superstar to lure in all the key market free agents coming out. How Miami had Dwayne Wade and they brought in Bosch and LeBron James, or how New York signed Amari this summer and was able to bring in Billups and Melo. Maybe they needed that big, you know, that big name guy to bring in players. Even though the Nets right now with Deron Williams are playing magnificent basketball, possibly a lot better when they had Devin Harris at the horn, but we all know how that is. But I think Deron Williams is going to probably be happy there. Maybe he'll get an extension. Maybe he'll opt out. Maybe, hell, he might go to New York. We don't know.
Yeah, I do agree with that he'll go to New York. Deron Williams is one of my favorite players. I was surprised by the move. But, it, you know, I was surprised, but in a way I wasn't. I knew it was a matter of time before he got traded. I see the point the Nets are trying to prove, to, like, try to lure in free agents by adding a superstar to build around. But I just don't see the Nets in the future having that marquee team, whether they move to Brooklyn, they can move to Egypt for all I care. They're still not going to have – I don't think they're going to lure in anybody. I don't think Deron Williams is going to sign an extension with them. If anything, I see Deron Williams going to the Knicks. In my opinion, this trade makes sense just because I think Deron Williams overstayed his welcome in Utah, sort of forced the coach out. You know, but for the Jazz, I mean, they do get a key piece back. They got a very impressive rookie in Derek Favors. But, you know, they got a decent point guard in return. So, I mean, we just have to wait and see how it all plays out.
And not to mention another two first-round picks. So we'll have to see there. Maybe Jay-Z just needed somebody to rap about, and he was tired of Brook Lopez.
Probably.
Wouldn't doubt it.
We'll see what happens there in New Jersey. Moving on to the Heat, finally releasing Carlos Arroyo, adding Mike Bibby. This could help the Heat, could not help the Heat. I think Bibby's old, but he's better than what we have. He does provide that three-point shot to the Heat. We just have to see you know, if there's going to be enough time for him to build chemistry before the playoffs start. Javi, what do you think about this acquisition? You think the Heat did good in signing him?
Yeah, the Heat did awesome in this. One thing I am going to say, I liked Carlos Arroyo. He wasn't a bad point guard. I said in the beginning of the season that this was his job to lose. All he had to do was hit open jump shots, and he couldn't do that. Mike Bibby will certainly fill in that void. He'll hit open jump shots when he has to and make plays late in the game and set up our big three in key situations late game. So, you know, that's what we needed. We needed a veteran point guard, with playoff experience. And I think we got that with Bibby.
I agree. I believe this acquisition will help out Miami. And so, a funny fact is Bibby has more points. Field goals made than Mario Chalmers and Carlos Arroyo combined. He also averages more assists than Carlos Arroyo and Mario Chalmers. So this is a big acquisition for the Heat. Yeah, he's old and stuff, but it's where you need a veteran to run a big team like this. He's going to do the playmaking. He's going to hit those open threes when LeBron drives or Wade drives. He's going to have that open look. Mike maybe will hit that jump shot with no problem. Sure, he may have the problem defending point guards, but I believe this is where Mario Chalmers comes off the bench and it's going to bring up his value, and he's going to be a better player overall because now he doesn't have to worry about, okay, I don't have to be the guy, you know, making open shots, you know, having all this pressure on me. I can just relax, be a backup point guard, and be a defense piece for the second team off the bench. And I believe he's going to be a very good point guard off the bench.
All right, let's move now straight to the Boston Celtics. Did a lot of key things right now to improve their team, which is already in first place for the East. Let's start off with the trade to the Oklahoma City Thunder, where they acquired Jeff Green for Nate Robinson and Kendrick Perkins. I believe this is a very good trade. You don't know how many more years you got left with Kevin Garnett. If you got 1 year after this season, he retires. Maybe when Doc Rivers leaves, he leaves. Jeff Green's a very good player. I think it was a very good acquisition. Don't like that they got rid of Kendrick Perkins, their possible only good center that they had right there with Shaquille O'Neal possibly out the door, and Jermaine O'Neal as well possibly out the door with all his injury problems. But I think it was a very good acquisition. What do you guys think?
I think the Boston Celtics were out of their mind trading Kendrick Perkins. I don't know what they were thinking by trading him. They haven't had a healthy center all season. And then when Perkins comes back, you trade him. Mind you, this is a team that hasn't lost a playoff series with Kendrick Perkins in the lineup. The only playoff series they lost was against the Lakers last year, Game 7. You know, you could see he was clearly missed. No size underneath. They didn't have that anchor defensively. So I don't see how is it that the Celtics thought this would make sense. Now, they signed Troy Murphy. That's not going to fill in the void for Kendrick Perkins. I don't know what they were thinking. Dumb trade. I honestly think they should have stayed with Perkins because you cannot count on an aging Shaquille O'Neal and Jermaine O'Neal, it's made of glass. I mean, just look last year for the Heat, you know, wasn't consistent.
I totally agree. This is a head scratcher for me. Yes, Jeff Green is an amazing player. He's probably be a replacement for Kevin Garnett when his time is up. We don't know when that will be because Kevin Garnett right now is playing out of his mind. But the Kendrick Perkins part of the deal is I'm scratching my head. Because you haven't had a healthy center all year. You've had Shaquille O'Neal banged up and Jermaine O'Neal has played, I don't even know, possibly less than 5 games, I think. So, I don't know. Right now, I think their starting center was Big Baby Davis. That's not going to do good in the East. When their main thing was their big bodies in the paint and Miami was beat because of that. And now Chris Bosh can take advantage of that and possibly could be the weakness of the team, and Miami maybe now in the playoffs could beat them along with the Chicago Bulls.
We'll have to wait and see. A lot of acquisitions they made, adding Troy Murphy possibly to fill the void, might be washed up. Boston did retain that center. Might have been their plan all along, in my opinion, to get rid of Kendrick Perkins for Troy Murphy. But they're making moves. Everybody's making moves for the playoffs. We'll have to see how they're done. But talking about playoffs right now, like Michael had in his baseball segment, we're going to have a fun segment here. Name me a player that needs to be perfect for that team to make it into the playoffs. And I'm going to start off, and I'm going to start off with the guy with breaking news, if you want to call it. Kevin Durant just got injured playing. What team was it, Michael?
I don't have it right in front of me. I just got alerted that he got hurt. I think it was in the second half of this game, and he was out of the game after the injury. But I don't know what opponent it was.
Well, if that is the case, then it just lives up to my opinion. I think Oklahoma City needs Kevin Durant healthy. They need him to be keep playing how they played. They showed a lot last year, taking it to the LA Lakers. If possibly they had a center, which they added in Kendrick Perkins now, makes them scary, but they still need, I think, in my opinion, Kevin Durant to perform like his MVP candidate player, how he should. And he needs to step it up all the way to the NBA Finals if they make it that far. Other than that, if this is a serious injury, then you could just kiss Oklahoma City down the drain.
Totally agree. Kevin Durant is their main scorer. Yes, it has Russell Westbrook, but Russell shines because of Kevin Durant. And if you have Kevin Durant not there, Russell is not going to be able to score 30 or 40 points on a night that we're used to seeing from him. And Russell's not going to be their answer with Kevin Durant down.
The player, I think, needs to step up his game. Well, not really step up his game. He's already a proven player, a finals MVP, is Dwayne Wade. Dwayne Wade has had an up-and-down season. There's been games where he's just unbelievable. But then there's been some games, for instance, Celtics, Bulls. I think it was first game against the Bulls. You know, I think the Celtics, he scored like 13 points in one game. He needs to be more consistent against the elite teams. I mean, yeah, it's fun and all, beating up on, you know, Sacramento, stuff like that, having 40-point games. But you need to pick up your game against the elite teams. You need to be on your A game, especially when you play the Bostons, the Chicagos. You know, if now, you know, this year we're not going to make it to the finals if, you know, we don't have our big three playing at full potential.
Definitely agree. Dwayne Wade needs to step up his game. Yeah, he does have 440-point games, but those 440 games, I don't think they've been against elite teams. I may be wrong, but the games I've seen him play, he just goes off nuts against not good teams. When he goes against Boston, like you said, I think he had 13 points in the game. That's not Dwayne Wade. Dwayne Wade needs to show everybody that he is Dwayne Wade, and he can score a 25, 30-point games. Yeah, he has LeBron, then he has Chris Bosh there. But, you know, when it's your time to step up and be the guy, Dwayne Wade has to step up and be that guy, because LeBron James cannot play 48 minutes consecutively. You know, he's not that kind of Iron Man.
Most definitely. They both, all three of them need to perform when they play elite teams. They're just not doing that right now. This could just all be a part of the show. They're not motivated like the Lakers were. It is just the season, and the season is overrated in basketball, in my opinion. Maybe they're saving it for the playoffs when actually the heat turns on, you know. But having another fun activity, a fun thing, now we're going to pick the team right now that you're the most scared of. And I'll start right now with the Spurs. They just can't seem to lose a single game. Even with Tony Parker out, they still have an amazing bench that scares teams. And they have won, again, 50 games for the fourth straight time in a row. It's incredible the way they're playing. They're aging veterans, and they seem, when one player goes down, the other people off the bench or other players just take over for whoever's injured. Tim Duncan will always be there, and always, we all know, will be a Hall of Fame, one of the best power forwards to ever play the game. And Tony Parker, now, you know, out for a while, but that young, promising point guard that they have in George Hill has always been very good in this absence of Tony Parker. I think the big question mark is what a lot of reporters are saying is, how is this going to ruin the groove from the Spurs? Tony Parker didn't miss a couple games last season with injuries, and George Hill took over. And once Tony Parker came back, it seemed to be like something was missing. Like they needed more time with George Hill rather than Tony Parker. But that's my team. That's kind of scary right now. What are your teams?
My team's gonna be the defending world champions, Los Angeles Lakers. Kobe's still there. Kobe's Kobe. And you know what? You still got to be scared of him no matter what. Pau Gasol is still playing amazingly, even though he hit that wall between December and January. But now he's starting to go back to his game. Ron Artest is starting to wake up as well. Andrew Bynum is playing like the player that they expected him to play. Off the bench, you got Lamar Odom, who night in and night out, you can depend on him to be productive. Also, you got Shannon Brown, who's playing magnificent for me. And also, the point guard, yeah, you got Fisher there who's getting old, but you still got to worry about Steve Blake. Steve Blake can command this team and hit that open three if you leave him open, so you got to watch out with this team as well.
Well, Mark, you did talk about the Spurs, and the one thing that impresses me about the Spurs is that in recent years, they've been more of a defensive-oriented team. This year, they're playing more of an up-tempo, you know, scoring over 100 points a game. And I've been impressed with the Spurs, but my team is going to be the Oklahoma City Thunder. I think that the Perkins trade, for them, they got what they needed. They needed a defensive anchor in the middle, a big body to cover up the paint. Now they have great players such as James Harden, Russell Westbrook, and Durant. This team has gotten so good in such a short amount of time that it's impressive. Last year they took it to the Lakers, and if it wasn't for two lucky plays at the end of regulation, I honestly thought that series would have gone to seven games. So I'm like really hoping to see what the Oklahoma City Thunder could do in the playoffs.
And this is our newest addition to the show, which is going to usually happen towards the end of the show, and we'll call it the fastest minute. And in the fastest minute, what we're going to discuss about is a random topic. Each host or special guest is going to have a minute to talk about whatever they want to say. Could be about basketball, football, baseball, or any other topic. Doesn't have to be about sports. It's just a quick 1 minute to say whatever you have to say. And I'm going to start it off. And I'm going to start off with, if Derrick Rose does not win the MVP, I'm going to go on strike. There's not a single thing that this guy hasn't done this season in order to win it. Now, I know we're all talking about how LeBron and Kevin Durant, they're all doing the normal. And to me, if you're doing the normal, that's fine. It's already normal. LeBron is always going to hit his 20, grab his 8 rebounds and his 7 assists. He's going to have his triple-doubles. There's nothing out of the norm out of that. The way Derrick Rose is playing, that's out of the norm. Everything that he's done this season has been out of the norm. Especially the Bulls being in third place is out of the norm. And that's a big reason why he should win the MVP.
I want to go on baseball. And apparently Miguel Cabrera has led a trend with DUIs. Has now another player has been caught arrested for a DUI offense. And that player being Coco Crisp. Coco Crisp was caught earlier today by police. Pulled over by a cop. They didn't do the... Asked the cop, asking him if he knows me, but he did got pulled over for a DUI, and now the Oakland Athletics are punishing him for that.
Well, at least Coco Chris didn't use the excuse, "Do you know who I am?" Anyways, speaking about the godfather of DUIs, pretty memorable week for Charlie Sheen. Has been going on to TV, ranting about 2.5 Men's producer, and because of that, the show's been canceled. How are you really going to complain when you're getting paid $2 million per episode? Are you seriously that Jewish that you need more money? Seriously. I mean, your wife just got a restraining order against you. You're going to keep on complaining, but at least something positive came out of this. Charlie Sheen is rumored to be in The Hangover 2, so keep an eye out for that.
We'll have to keep out an eye on that. Let's see if Charlie Sheen snaps back into his reality.
Well, that's about wraps it up for our show today. Thanks for everyone for listening today. I want to give a special thanks to Javi for coming on the show. Thank you, Javi.
Thanks for having me, dude.
Hey, no problem, man. Just to live out a quick reminder to everybody, please follow us on our Twitter at Overtime Podcast. And at the same time, if you want to follow us on Facebook, all you do is follow our main website at overtimepodcast.com. And in there, you could just go to the bottom right corner and you could just click like and you automatically follow us on Facebook and you'll get the trio package. Also, if you want to follow our sister company, Coffee with Andrew and Rob, please go at their website and visit them at coffeewithrob.net. And before I end the show, I was going to write this on our website, but might as well, if we have it right now and he's here right now, we're going to add him to our team right now. So congratulations to Javier Vasquez that he will be one of our insider bloggers for Overtime Podcast.
Yay!
Well, thanks again for joining us. As always, I'm Mark, your main host. And
I am Michael.
Thank you. Have a wonderful night.
Goodbye to you, Lynn.
This podcast is a part of the Vita Media Group Network, blogs and shows designed to never let your coffee get cold. To find out more, go to vitagroup.com.